Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio from Boise, Idaho. This is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, email it to me, box13@greatdetectives.net. Give us a call, 208-991-4783, and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/radiodetectives. Well, before we do get started, I want to encourage you, if you've not already, to pick up your copy of What Made the Golden Age Shine. In this essay, I examine what made Golden Age entertainers, such as Jimmy Durante and Lou Costello, so popular, and what makes Golden Age entertainment continue to attract new audiences to this day. You'll find out this in What Made the Golden Age Shine, available for your Kindle. Well, Alive in Your Hands concluded its first run in 1949, and when People Are Funny went on vacation again in 1950, once again, the program was set up, this time with a new actor playing Jonathan Keg. The actor in question was Carlton Cadell. Cadell really was better known for some of his performances as an announcer. He was known for working on Amos and Andy, for instance, as well as the Sealtest Variety Theater with Dorothy L'Amour. However, he had done his fair share of acting work. Perhaps his most notable role was as a Tarzan in the 1930s, and then later on in 1952, he would become the last radio actor to play the role of Sky King. So, a true radio performer taking over here for this 1950 run. There would be a 1951 run of A Life With Your Hands that would star Lee Bowman. But none of those episodes are available. So, this is the last Jonathan Keg will hear. Cadell would also take on the role in 1952. So, here is the first case we have from the Carlton Cadell era. This one is from May 25th, 1950, and the title is Carol Carson Murdered.
Raleigh Cigarettes present transcribed Earl Stanley Gardner's A Life in Your Hands.
Was there a door between the rooms? What time did you deliver the groceries? Where was the poker?
Listen while we place A Life in Your Hands.
Decisions recently issued by the Federal Trade Commission, an agency of the United States government, should convince you...
You cannot believe in throat tests.
You cannot believe in nose tests.
But you can believe your own eyes.
So take the Raleigh eye test and see for yourself the only real important difference between leading brands of cigarettes. A difference you can believe because it's a difference you can see. The Raleigh Profit-Sharing Premium Coupon.
You never know when you step from the safety of your home, when you may witness a violent death and be called upon to testify as to what you saw and heard, and suddenly find yourself with a life in your hands. Murder is a dark enigma that strikes fear into the heart of man, strange, baffling, mysterious. But the darkest crime one man can invent, another man can unravel. Such a man is Jonathan Keg, created by Earl Stanley Gardner, the world's most popular mystery writer, creator of Perry Mason, Christopher London, and many other outstanding characters.
I beg your pardon. Is this seat taken?
No, it isn't. Sit down, won't you?
Thanks. Where are you headed for?
Bear Lake, Illinois, to do a little fishing.
Oh, good idea. You're entitled to a little rest after that Jackson case.
Hmm? I beg your pardon. Have we met?
No, I'm Joe Maxwell of the Times. You see, it's a reporter's business to know people like you, Mr. Keg.
Well, thank you very much.
You can help me out, if you will. This work you do is amicus curiae. Would you explain it to me? You see, I've never reported one of your cases, but I might sometime, and it would help me to know what an amicus curiae is.
Glad to help you, Joe. An amicus curiae, which is translated literally as a friend of the court, is a person who is an expert in a specific field, who, without serving either the prosecution or the defense, helps the court to discover the objective truth.
Well, I know you're an expert at cross-examination. Do you cross-examine a witness till you finally get the truth?
That's about the size of it. You know, Joe, it's amazing how many times the testimony of a completely innocent bystander is the thing that brings out the truth. Any of us may at any time be witness to a crime. And what we see and hear may mean someone's life. Even now, somewhere about us, there may be a crime in the making.
Sue, get away from that window and help me with your... What you doing?
It's Betsy, Ma. She's following Matt and the Harrow. She's too little. She's going to fall and get hurt.
Oh, now, don't worry none about that. Matt will soon lose legs, let Betsy get hurt.
Matt can't be watching the child always.
That man got his choice. The farm will go to seed before he lets that young'un get into mischief.
And that ain't no good either, Ma. Old man Carson said Matt and I was to raise her. Can't do that unless we got money from out of the farm.
Now, don't fret so, Sue. Betsy's all right. Say, you hear what Tom Child said when he brung the groceries from town today?
No. What was that?
Said he heard from Lawyer Bates they let Betsy's ma out the penitentiary a week ago.
Carol? Loose? Oh, Ma. You think she'll come back here?
I don't know. Maybe. Carol Carson do most anything again.
She ain't gonna get Betsy back. You hear me, Ma?
Now, Sue, don't you go and get all wrought up. Old man Carson give Betsy to you and Matt to bring up. I do wish there'd been some writing on it, though. Writing according to the law.
Sue! Ma Fisher, Sue, you hear me?
Matt, what happened? What happened to Betsy?
She was running after me while I was harrowing. I was watching her much as I could. She must have tripped on a rock. Anyhow, she cut her hand on one of the blades and it set her off. I can't do nothing with her.
You give me that child, Matt Wilson. There, honey, now don't you take on so. Granny will fix it up. Yes, there.
Is she hurt bad, Ma?
No. Her hand's cut a bit, but she's mostly scared. I'm going to take her in and wash that hand off some. You two don't worry none. I'll take care of her.
Your Ma sure is wonderful with a child, Sue.
Yeah. She acts just like it was our own. I guess she wanted a grandchild much as we wanted our own baby.
We got our own baby now, Sue. Old man Carson said Betsy was ours.
Tom Childs told Ma they let Carol loose last week. You hear that?
Yeah. They told him in town yesterday. I didn't want to worry you none, honey.
I know, Matt. Thing that worries me. Can Carol take Betsy away from us? Can she, Matt? I couldn't stand it.
Old man Carson give Betsy to us. He didn't want the woman that killed his boy to raise his grandchild, even if she is Betsy's real mother. Carol ain't going to take Betsy away from us, Sue. Not over my dead body.
Matt, someone's coming.
Probably Jay Smith. His mare's about to pull.
Matt, it's Carol Carson. She's just driving up.
Where's my rifle?
Now, Matt, don't do nothing rash.
Be quiet, Sue. Come on. You too, Ma.
What?
What do you want here, Carol?
Why, the gun, Matt.
What do you want here?
Hello, Sue. How are you, Ma?
Mrs. Fisher, to you.
What are you doing here? What do you think? I came for my kids. You ain't gonna get
no,
Betsy.
No, you can't.
Be quiet, you two. Get out of here, Carol.
No use to argue. I got a court order.
I said get out of here.
Take it easy, Matt. The law says
damn
that
the law. No one takes Betsy out of this house. Now get.
You can't
Matt,
do this.
Put down that rifle.
Get.
You think you can get away with this, Matt Wilson, but you can't. I'm going to have my kid.
I'm giving you till I count three. One. Two.
Matt, you had no right to threaten Mrs. Carson with a rifle. Mrs. Carson is Betsy's real mother. Judge Slade gave an order putting Betsy in her mother's custody till there could be a trial on the matter.
But, Sheriff, Carol Carson ain't fit
now, to... Matt, the court's the best judge of what's fit.
John Orcutt, I've known you since you was... Well, since we played together as kids. And you know well as me, this woman ain't the one should have Betsy.
Please, Sheriff. We've had Betsy 2 years. She's just like our own.
If you people want to bring suit for custody of the child, you can do so. In the meantime, the court says Betsy's to be turned over to her real mother.
No! No! That woman just wants to get hold of old man Carson's money. She don't care about my Betsy. You can't do it!
Sue, be quiet. Sheriff, I don't know what'll have to do. But Betsy's our child. And that woman ain't never gonna raise her.
You listen to me. I've had all I'm gonna take from you. Betsy's my brat, and I'm gonna keep her. You think after all I put up with from Bill Carson, after being shut up in prison for 2 long years, you think after all that I'm gonna have nothing to show? I got Betsy. And long as I got her, I got this farm. And I'm gonna keep them both. Now, you get out of here. Get out before I take this poker and paint.
If I knew you was coming, I'd have been bake your cake. Listen to that young'un, will you? Little Betsy ain't been the same kid since she come to live with her ma. That Carol Carson ain't no good. Matt Wilson ever hear that youngster take on like that? Huh. Quiet it down. Mrs. Carson. Mrs. Carson. Groceries. Must have gone out and left the kid alone. Mrs. Carson. Groceries. Don't want to wake Betsy. I'll just put the stuff in the kitchen here. What kind of mother is she?
Hello, this is Sheriff Alcott.
Sheriff, this is Matt Wilson. I'm at the Carson place. You better get out here right away. Somebody's murdered Carol Carson.
Smokers, it pays two ways to smoke Raleigh cigarettes. It pays with top-quality smoking enjoyment. It pays with luxury premium. There are over 75 beautiful premiums, and you can get them just like gifts. Just smoke Raleigh's and save the profit-sharing coupon. And remember,
a recent decision by the Federal Trade Commission, an agency of the United States government, should prove to you.
You cannot believe in throat tests.
You cannot believe in nose tests.
But you can believe your own eyes. So take the Raleigh eye test and see for yourself the only important difference between leading brands of cigarettes. A difference you can believe, because it's a difference you can see. The Raleigh Profit Sharing Premium Coupon.
Come in. The door's unlocked.
Mr. Jonathan Cake?
Yes? Can I help you?
My name's John Aldgate. I'm sheriff here.
Oh, glad to know you, Sheriff. Sit down.
Thank you.
I've been out fishing all morning.
Oh.
As soon as I finish dressing, I'm going downstairs for a bite of lunch. Care to join me?
Pleasure, Mr. Cake. Tell me, ain't you the one I read about in the papers? Fella helps judges find out who really commits crimes?
Well, I guess I have had a good deal of publicity. Quite often, I act as amicus curiae.
Amicus? Yeah, you're the man I wanted to see.
Now, Sheriff, I'm here for a little rest and vacation. All I want to do is fish.
Mighty fine bass in Bear Lake.
I was out there this morning. Why, do you know I had one on my line? It must have been that long.
Land him?
No, unfortunately. Just another big one that got away.
Mr. Keg, just what is a amicus curiae? I got a general idea, of course, but I'd like to get it straight.
Well, an amicus curiae is a person who has special qualifications to help a court discover the true facts. I cross-examine witnesses.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Keg, I ain't a court, but I sure want to find out the truth. You think you could help me?
In an investigation?
Something like that.
I don't ever do any kind of detective work.
Well, we had a killing last week. A woman named Carol Carson shot her husband a couple of years back. Just got out of the penitentiary.
Who killed her? Some of her husband's family?
Nope. Only family her husband, Bill Carson, had was his pa. He died right after sent Carol away.
Wait a minute, Sheriff. The minimum penalty for murder in this state is 14 years. How could the woman have been released so soon?
They called it manslaughter. Give her 1 to 5.
I see.
This woman had a baby, a little girl named Betsy. She's 3 now. Old man Carson, Bill's pa, left everything he had to Betsy. And left her in the care of Matt and Sue Wilson. Oh, she and Matt just adore Betsy. So does her ma. She lives with him.
Go on, Sheriff.
Well, Carol come back to town about 10 days ago. Got an order from Judge Slade giving her custody of Betsy. The Wilsons never had no legal papers on their caring for the child.
Well, the mother is entitled to the child, Sheriff.
Shucks, she only wanted Betsy's money.
What happened?
Saturday afternoon, about 3:15, Matt called me from the Carson place. Said somebody killed Carol. I went out there. Somebody put a bullet, rifle bullet, right through the back of her head. Then I went to Wilson Farm. Matt and the others were there. So was little Betsy. All Matt would say was he found Carol dead. Called me, then took Betsy home with him.
That's not at all unlikely.
No. Only thing wrong about it, the bullet that killed Carol come from Matt Wilson's rifle. I found the rifle in his kitchen.
What does he have to say about that?
Nothing. Won't talk. I ain't arrested him yet. But I gotta arrest somebody soon. I got them all come to my office this afternoon. I was wondering if you could be there.
Well, I don't see how I could help, Sheriff.
Mr. Kay, I've known these folks all my life. They're good people. Maybe you could find out the truth. Will you be there?
I'll do what I can.
Well, that's the story, Matt. Up in Springfield, they say it was a bullet from your rifle that killed Carol. Seems ballistic proved it. What's that say?
Nothing.
Now, Matt, that attitude ain't going to help none. What was it, self-defense? Carol's body was lying in front of the fireplace, across the poker, like she was drawn for it.
That's very interesting.
Huh? You got some questions you want to ask, Mr. Case?
One or two, if I may. Sheriff, you say Carol's body was found in the living room in front of the fireplace. She'd been shot through the back of the head.
That's right.
Where in the house did little Betsy sleep?
Well, her crib was in a small room just off the living room.
Was there a door between the two rooms?
Yes, there was.
Did you examine the whole house?
Went over the whole place. Nothing was upset.
I understand, but what I'm getting at is this. Was there any indication that anyone else had been in the house that day?
No, I can't take it. Wait a minute. There was a bag of groceries sitting just inside the kitchen door. That'd mean Tom Childs probably made a delivery sometime that day.
Uh-huh. Has the time of death been established?
Coroner figures it was between 2:30 and 3 o'clock.
Thank you, Sheriff. Now, Matt, what's your story?
Nothing much. I went up to the Carson place around 3. Carol was lying there dead. I ran into the baby's room to see she was all right. She was sleeping peacefully. So I phoned the sheriff what happened. Then I woke Betsy up and carried her home. That's all.
Where was your rifle at that time?
In my hand.
Why did you go to see Carol Carson?
I wanted her to give Betsy back.
How long had you had the rifle with you?
Ever since I went out after we ate. About 12 o'clock.
Excuse me, Mr. Keg. Matt, if you had that rifle with you from 12 o'clock to after the murder, then you must have shot Betsy. Carol.
I didn't shoot no one. I potted a crow over the corn, that's all.
But, Matt, ballistics prove the murder bullet was fired from your rifle.
I don't know nothing about them ballistics. I guess they could make a mistake like anyone else.
Oh, they don't make no mistakes, Matt. I guess after that, there's not much I can do. Garner's jury says it's murder. I gotta arrest you, Matt, for murder.
Oh, no. No, you can't do
now,
this to my Matt. Sheriff, he ain't done
I'm sorry, Susan.
Wrong.
I don't have no
oh,
choice
no,
in the matter.
Sheriff, he ain't
Stay
done
out of this, Sue. Sheriff, do it what's right.
Sheriff, I'd like to ask these people some questions.
Go ahead, Mr. King.
Thank you. Mr. Wilson, when you found Carol's body, you said the baby was in the next room asleep.
That's right.
Sheriff, when you got the phone call, did you hear the baby in the background?
No, didn't hear nothing but Matt.
I see. Are you certain Carol Carson was killed before 3 o'clock?
Doc Poe says no earlier than 2:30, no later than 3.
Strange. What's the caliber of Matt's rifle, Sheriff?
.30-06.
Make a lot of noise in a closed room?
Sure would.
Hmm. Mrs. Wilson, what did you do after the midday meal?
Ma and I tidied up. Then I took the car and went into town to match some material for a dress.
What time did you leave and what time did you get back?
Left about 1, I guess. Got back near 3:30.
Did you spend all that time matching material?
Well, no. No, I didn't. I was upset about losing Betsy. I didn't even go to town at all. I just drove around back roads. Once I stopped the car and had myself a good cry.
Yes, yes, I understand. Tell me about Betsy. Is she a calm and placid child, a sound sleeper?
Oh, goodness, no. She's real high-strung, wakes up if there's any noise. Scares easy. Too easy, I say.
Hmm. Mrs. Fisher, where were you that afternoon?
To home, putting up tomatoes.
All afternoon?
Yep.
Between 1 o'clock when Sue left in the car, and the time Matt got home with Betsy, did you see anyone?
No, not at all.
Now, let me get this straight. Mrs. Fisher was at home alone at the time of the murder. Sue Wilson was riding around in the car, also alone. And Matt was... What were you doing, Matt?
Just wandering around the farm, checking the crops and the like.
Carrying your rifle?
Yes.
Did you see anyone?
No.
I wonder if you three would mind waiting in the hall for a few minutes. I'd like to speak to the sheriff in private.
Come on, Mark.
What was the idea of that, Mr. King?
You know, Sheriff, if this were anything but murder, I'd take my hat off to those people.
Where's that?
One of them is undoubtedly guilty. But look at it from a jury's point of view. Each of them had a strong motive in love for the child. Not one of them had anything even remotely like an alibi. And they all had a chance to get the rifle.
Yeah, but Matt says he had the rifle.
If he's telling the truth, he must be guilty. Well, I suspect he would say that even if he didn't have it. To protect whichever of the women he thinks did it.
Yeah, that's what he'd do.
What about fingerprints on the rifle?
Had all their prints on it.
Yeah, naturally, it would. Now, Sheriff, you've got enough to convince a jury that one of them is guilty. But the way things stand now, the jury wouldn't be able to decide which one. And that means they would all go free.
Yeah, what do you suggest, Mr. King?
We need more testimony. There's one other person I'd like to call, someone we haven't talked to.
I'll get anyone you want, Mr. King, anyone at all.
Jonathan Keg is about to question a person who had absolutely no connection with the crime, except that he happened to be in a certain place at a certain time. If that person were you, could you possibly recall what you had seen or heard? Your responsibility would be great, for you would hold a life in your hands.
You cannot believe in throat tests.
You cannot believe in nose tests.
Decisions recently issued by the United States government Federal Trade Commission should convince every intelligent smoker that you cannot believe in throat tests. You cannot believe in nose tests. These distinguished government experts, appointed by law to protect the public against false advertising claims, have declared...
One. There is no reliable basis for claims that one brand is superior to another in respect to throat irritants.
Two, all manufacturers of leading brands of cigarettes buy their leaf tobacco from the same sources.
With these two facts in mind, give yourself Raleigh's famous eye test. Hold up two packs of cigarettes. One of Raleigh's, one of any other leading brand. Turn them around. Take the eye test. You'll see the difference.
Yes, you'll see that only Raleigh's have a coupon on the back. And smokers, that Raleigh profit-sharing coupon is the only real important difference between leading brands of cigarettes. It's a difference you can believe because it's a difference you can see. So switch to Raleigh Cigarettes, America's greatest cigarette value.
Jonathan Keg has asked the sheriff to summon Tom Childs to his office. Childs is the man who delivers groceries to the farms in the area. He's also sent for little Betsy, although she has been kept outside. Mr. Keg has now begun to question Tom Childs.
Mr. Childs, at what time, as a rule, do you deliver groceries?
Depends on who they're for. I'm apt to leave town about 1.
Was it usual for you to reach the same farms at about the same time every day?
Yep.
What time did you usually get to the Carson place?
Around 2:45.
Is that the time you got there last Saturday?
About then.
When you arrived, did you see Mrs. Carson?
Nope, I didn't see no one. Just opened the door and set the stuff on the kitchen floor and went on my way.
Didn't you knock or call out?
Yeah, but not too loud. Didn't want to rouse Betsy. She just got quieted down.
What do you mean, just got quieted down?
As I was driving up the lane, I... hear her start that wild screaming she does sometimes when she's real scared. But by the time I got to the house, she was all quiet. So I didn't make much noise.
Now, think carefully, Mr. Childs. Did you hear anything before the child began to scream? A shot, possibly?
I didn't note. There's lots of shooting hereabouts, what with crows and all.
Thank you, Mr. Childs. Where is Betsy, Sheriff?
Waiting outside.
Would you have her brought in now, please, and... have everyone else but Matt leave the room. Well, Betsy, you're a pretty little girl. How are you today, my dear?
She don't talk much to strangers.
No, she doesn't. I hate to do this. She'll be frightened, but we've got to find the truth. Go ahead, Sheriff. You'd better calm Betsy down, Mr. Wilson. She's frightened.
I can't. Can't no one calm her down when she's like that but Ma Fisher.
You got to my baby. Give me that child.
Go ahead, Mrs. Fisher. You're the only one who can quiet her. I think the best thing is for you to tell us just what happened, Mrs. Fisher.
All right. I'll tell. But I want you all to know I wasn't going to let Matt go to jail. I'd have told you before I'd let that happen. He's been real good to my girl.
I reckon you would have, Ma.
Thanks, Johnny. Well, I went over to the Carson place Saturday afternoon to talk some sense into Carol, but she wouldn't listen. I had Matt's rifle. Now, don't ask me why. I guess I was going to scare her. Anyhow, she wouldn't give Betsy back. I argued, but it just didn't do no good. And then she told me to get and reached for the poker. That's when I shot her.
Please go on, Mrs. Fisher.
Well, Betsy woke up and started to cry. I went in to quiet her. And while I was doing that, I heard Tom Childs bringing the groceries. I didn't know what to do. I knew the child had slept a while. She was all right. I couldn't think straight, so I wandered home so I could plan what to do. I plumb forgot Matt's rifle. And then before I could do anything, Matt come in with the baby. Said he found Carol dead.
When I found my rifle laying near Carol, I thought maybe Sue would... Well, I knew how she loved the baby. So I carried the rifle home and said I'd had it all the time.
I think we know the truth, Sheriff. I think self-defense would be a reasonable plea.
I think maybe you're right, Mr. Keg. But tell me, how did you get to the truth?
Thanks to the testimony of Tom Childs, who just happened to be in the vicinity, we learned that Betsy woke up and screamed. It was logical that if you shot off a rifle in the room next to where such a high-strung child was sleeping, that child would wake up and scream. Mrs. Fisher was the only one who could quiet Betsy when she was really upset.
Thanks for your help, Mr. Keg. You saved Matt. And as for Ma, well, we got lots of justice here, Bob.
Mr. Keg, that was a most interesting case.
It was indeed, Mr. Wallace. And thanks to the testimony of an innocent bystander, you were able to arrive at the truth.
Thanks very much, Mr. Keg, and good night.
Good night, Mr. Wallace.
Friends, here's a cordial invitation for each of you to be with us next Tuesday, when you will again hear Jonathan Keg, created by Earl Stanley Gardner, author of the internationally famous Perry Mason stories and many others. And remember, you can believe your own eyes. So look for the pack with the coupon on the back. Rolly Cigarettes, America's greatest cigarette value.
I like a man who smokes a pipe.
Yes, women prefer men who smoke pipes. And pipe smokers prefer Sir Walter Raleigh, the quality pipe tobacco of America.
Men look like he-men when they're smoking pipes.
And real he-men naturally prefer Sir Walter Raleigh. They like its mellow goodness, its rich, satisfying, no-bite flavor.
And Sir Walter Raleigh is so fragrant.
Yes, Sir Walter Raleigh is the brand of grand aroma.
Give me a man who smokes Sir Walter Raleigh.
A Life in Your Hands is created by Earl Stanley Gardner, with script by the McKees. The program is transcribed, produced, and directed by Jack Simpson, with musical effects by Whitey Berquist. Jonathan Keg is played by Carlton Cadell. This is Myron Wallace inviting you to be with us next week, when Raleigh's Cigarette, the pack with the coupon on the back, will again place A Life in Your Hands.
Welcome back. I love this episode. This is probably my favorite episode of the series that I've heard so far. I've heard a few others that come after this, not all of them yet. But I love this episode in that they take Keg kind of out of his normal roles to get to the truth of the case. And I find that just a great twist, and I love the plot as well. It definitely creates a more sympathetic case, but the cross-examination skills of Jonathan Keg come in handy, and he's able to solve the case. Well, that'll do it for today. We will be back with you tomorrow with Let George Do It, and then join us next Tuesday for Life in Your Hands, and remember, Saturday marks the first regular program as we will begin playing for you the lineup on our new police procedural day. In the meantime, send your comments to Box 13 at GreatDetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and give us a call, 208-991-4783. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.